If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1019. It's the 16th of March, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Paul Welsh, President and Chief Executive Officer of SDX Energy. That's SDX ticker. And Paul talks about their recent oil discovery in Egypt, their gas discovery in Morocco, and gives an update on general progress at the company. Plus, I also have James Palman, Chief Financial Officer of Seeing Machines, that's SEE, and James goes over some of the highlights from their recently released interim results. I also have Russ Mould, Investment Director at stockbroker AJ Bell, talking about the following stocks: Alumask, Mangus Telecom, and Therissa. Plus, as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Paul Welsh, President and Chief Executive Officer of SDX Energy. That's SDX ticker. Paul, thanks for joining me again.
Thanks for having me. I think it's been since June I was on the program, so it's wonderful to be back.
Yeah, 9 months, but I feel like you haven't been away that far, because Malky's on every Monday, and he does often mention you quite a lot, because I know he's a big fan of you, so it's not like you've been away. You've been mentioned on the podcast quite a few times, but it's nice to get you on here. For people not aware of you, though, Paul, describe or summarize what SDX is all about, please.
All right, so simply, I think SDX is we're an explorer and a producer. We operate in two countries in North Africa, Egypt and Morocco. We produce roughly about 4,000 barrels a day, three of which would be in Egypt and 1,000 in Morocco equivalent. We've had a lot of success, and we're looking to grow to the future. So again, we have about 9 million barrels of reserves presently. But we expect that to increase when we put out a reserve report at the end of when our results come out here in a couple of weeks. Because of all the success we had in 2017, we are 100% successful in everything we drilled last year. And so as a result, we're going to see a bump up in our reserves in the 2018 when we report. So we've had a lot of success recently, and we look forward to talk about it on the cast here.
Yeah, that's unusual. That amount of, you said, 100% successful. What do you put that down to? How do you do that? Because that's very unusual.
Well, first of all, I think we shouldn't talk about it too much because I think you tend to jinx it. But we had a number of prospects that we had to drill. So we had a very active program in Morocco last year where there were a combination of development and exploration wells. And we just happened to, it's been roughly a 70-80% success rate. So we're very consistent with that. And then we had a big exploration prospect in Egypt called South Asuk, and that came in. And that was a relatively high-risk exploration prospect, so we were delighted that it came in. And I think the secret of both those things is that we had good quality seismic and also good quality subsurface technical work. So as a result of that, we delivered, I think, on all the promises we made in 2017. So we were more than delighted with what happened last year.
Okay, let's jump back to last Friday. You had a gas discovery at Sar-2 well in Morocco. Take us through the detail there, if you could, Paul.
Right, thanks very much. So Sar-2 was a development slash exploration well that was in and around our Sebu permit. We had about 5 meters of pay. Again, excellent quality sands here. So this well came in slightly better than prognosis. We're in the process of completing and testing it. So the testing should begin in the early part of next week. We expect this well to flow in excess of 10 million cubic feet a day. At the moment, we're producing about 6 million cubic feet a day and selling it to our customers. We've now drilled 5 wells, all of which can produce in excess of that by themselves. The well that we've tested the highest rate so far is 15 million cubic feet a day. So we've had an incredible run in Morocco. And in the first half of 2018, we're going to start adding customers to this business. And so we're going to increase our production from this current 6 million a day up to 8 to 10 by the time we exit 2018. So a lot of success here recently in Morocco.
Yeah. And let's jump over to Egypt then. So the Rabil 5 well as well is an old discovery there. So.
Yeah, so we just announced that yesterday. And again, the Rabil discoveries in general were a bit of a surprise. The first well had about 14 feet of pay, and so it was a good well. It was, I would say, of marginal interest. And then we drilled Rabil 2, and that had 101 feet of pay in it. So then we offset the Rabil 2, let's call it discovery, with the Rabil 5. And we had 151 feet of pay in this well. So just to put it in perspective, the Rabil 1 well is currently producing about 400 barrels a day of oil. The Rabil 2 well is producing 1,000 barrels a day of oil. So when we get this well connected, the Rabil 5, we should produce in excess of that amount. So, and the 5 is currently being completed. It should be on production in the next 30 days or so. So, you know, we should see a significant uptick in production in Rabil as a result of this well.
Yeah, so you mentioned that you're all around about 4,000 barrels a day equivalent. And what's the target, hopefully, here, Paul?
So, again, we're looking to exit 2018 at between 6,500 and 7,000 barrels a day. That's our target. Here in Rabil, we will probably peak production at about 3,500 barrels a day, but it'll be a kind of a sharp peak and then we'll drop off. The structure in Rabil is relatively contained; it's fault bound, so we'll get high initial rates and then we'll see it drop off. But it's good. We're drilling another well here after the Rabil 5 well. Surprisingly for your listeners, we're drilling the Rabil 4. And the reason for that is we went out and staked a number of locations, some of which we're going to drill and some of which we aren't. The Egyptian authority assigns numbers to them, and no matter what sequence you drill them in, they're in the numbers that are given to you by the authority. So that's why we drilled the 5 well first, and then we're going to follow up with the 4 well right after.
Yeah, and people can do the sort of their maths on this, but what is it? I mean, is it possible to say what your all-in cost of production is on across all these wells?
Yeah, I mean, our all-in cost of production, again, they're less than $10 a barrel. So if you look at Gemsa, our other producing asset in Morocco, in Egypt, it's about $7, $7.38, I think is the correct number. Here in Meseta, which is our other producing asset, we were running roughly $10.50. With the increased production, we're probably going to drop that to below $10, probably below $9 a barrel. So very inexpensive to produce onshore Egypt, so it makes us very resilient in any kind of price downturn.
Well, me doing the numbers here on my little calculator, see that is an amazing amount of revenue. I mean, and you are so at the moment sub 100 million market cap. I mean, most CEOs are going to say this, but do you consider yourself your value? Would you consider this a lot higher than this at the moment? Should be.
Yeah, I mean, again, we think we should be closer to 200 to 250 million in market cap. Again, it's just one of those things where I think we need to get the story out here. As we've discussed in the past, we're recent additions to AIM. Mm-hmm. And so we're building our profile. And so I think as that word gets out with the continued success, we'll approach something closer to our NAV. But at the moment, I think you're right. We're definitely undervalued relative to where we think we should be.
Okay. And as far as the next milestone for you or next bit of news coming out, what can people expect?
Well, I think there's a couple things happening. So we're going to spud our next well in Morocco, LNB-1. That will spud early next week. Rabil 5 will be followed up by Rabil 4, a very counterintuitive number there. That will happen in the next 30 days. And then I think the big excitement is we're going to start drilling again in our South Dessouk discovery. That will happen towards the very end of this month, end of March. And then we have a 4-well program there. And in that program, not only we're drilling exploration wells, but we're drilling 2 appraisal wells. And so at the end of that program, we're going to start the production up in that asset. So based on the results of the program, if the exploration wells don't work out, we're going to turn that field on to 50 million cubic feet a day. If they do work out, we're probably going to turn it on somewhere closer to 100 million cubic feet a day. So So we have a lot to play for here moving forward. It's a fantastic year for us in 2018.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, if someone's listening, Paul, and likes the sound of this, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, I think number one is we're delivering on our plans. We lay out a plan for everybody at the beginning of the year, and we're hitting it. So production growth, exploration success, and cash flow generation, we're there. I think number two is we've got a very active program in 2018. At one point, we're going to be having 5 rigs running. So that's a lot of catalysts for people to follow and to watch for, trigger increases in our share price. And I think five, we're in excellent financial health. We didn't talk about that. We have no debt. We got about $50 million in working capital, which $30 million is cash. And we're a high margin business. So we're generating $3 million a month in cash each and every month before these discoveries, you know, that we've just recently talked about have come on production. So we're very resilient in any downturn, and we're highly cash generative in any upturn in prices. So again, I think for those three reasons, we're a great a stock to follow.
Excellent stuff. Paul, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is James Palmer, Chief Financial Officer of Seeing Machines. That's S-E-E, C, ticker there. James, thanks for joining me.
Good to be here, thanks.
Now, you've had your interim results, your half-year results to the 31st of December recently. We'll go through those in a bit. Before we do the James, and I do this for every company that comes on, for someone who's not heard of Seeing Machines, can you explain or summarise what the business is all about, please?
Yeah, that's fine. Well, look, at our core, we're a tech company. We're a technology company. We're a machine learning and machine vision company that helps machines to see, interpret, and understand people. And the core application of that technology that we're commercializing at the moment is really in the transport sector, really around helping motor vehicles to detect drivers that are drowsy or distracted to make our roads safer.
Excellent stuff, and it's that's a huge area. Do you know what? I trust machines. I'm one of those people that trust machines. I don't trust humans. So this is ideal for that kind of tech. It's obviously a big area. So let's go through, I'll leave it to you. Like I say, you are the numbers guy, Chief Financial Officer. So take us through the half-year results to the 31st of December, if you would, James.
Okay, yeah, sure. Well, look, as you rightly said, you know, on Monday this week, we released our half-year accounts. That's the half-year to 31 December 2017. And look, a very pleasing result. At the top line, it was a record revenue for the company for the half year to 31 December. We did a total of 14.6 million in turnover. Now that's now for the whole of last year we did 13.6. So already in the half year we've exceeded what we did for the full year last year. So look, very very pleasing result at the top line. It was a total increase of 267% year on year. The biggest contributor to that revenue was in the automotive segment. The sales revenue there was 6.9 million. That was a 7x increase on the same period the previous year. And look, the key driver of that automotive revenue was, as your listeners are probably aware, we announced our OEM 2 win, our premium German OEM win back in September, and we delivered a number of key deliverable technology deliverables. Our engineers kicked off a number of key milestones in the half year, and that enabled us to bring the revenue to account that we get so compensated for that effort. So that was a big driver, hitting those technological milestones in that OEM program. And also, we have what's called a PCDMS, which is kind of a prototype of our technology that we lease out to potential customers so they can kind of play around with their technology and work out how they want to integrate it into the cars of the future. Mm-hmm. And that's a very lucrative program for us, and had a number of customers renewing leases or taking leases out for the first time, and that also contributed to that strong performance in automotive. I guess the second biggest contributor to the top line was around fleet. Fleet turned over 5.9 million in the year, which is over 250% increase on the previous year, and that's really starting to get some traction now as we add on more distribution partners and FMS fleet management system partners that basically distribute our stock for us or integrate with our technology. And this, remember, this is the retrofit application of our technology into commercial fleets, whereas the automotive is going into, you know, the next generation of motor vehicles. So look, very pleasing results. At the margin line, profitability is increasing as we make those, as we get these units connected in the fleet business. That's the profitable revenue coming through. And also, of course, with a strong showing in automotive, that's a bigger proportion of the revenue. That's very profitable revenue as well, because we're getting compensated for essentially what's in our fixed cost base with the engineering efforts. So look, very pleasing year. And when I look at what we're forecasting for the full year, I mean, the company put out an outlook of 38 to 43 million at the top line. We're on line to achieving that. We're lucky in fleet. We have a very good line of sight as to what the future looks like, because we have a very, very healthy order book, much of which is still to be delivered. So it's kind of, you know, signed contracts with customers that we haven't delivered on yet. So we know that's going to land. And also we've got a very strong sales pipeline. And, you know, based on conversion rates in the past, we can that gives us a really good line of sight around revenue in the future. Very pleasing results. The other thing I'd mention, I suppose, is that in the second part, the back end of that period, we conducted a capital raise, and we initially were oversubscribed and took £35 million from shareholders, as well as a follow-on offer to existing shareholders of a further £2.4 million. So that has us capitalized for the long term now. So it's we've really got the funds now to be able to execute on our plans and deliver some real shareholder value. Now that cash isn't on the balance sheet at 31 December. It was subject to a shareholder vote in early January, and that went ahead without issue, and the cash came in January, so we disclosed that as a subsequent event in our accounts. It's been a good half year, and we're looking forward to a strong second half as well.
Excellent. Well, you've done this before, Jack. I was just going to say that. I was going to say, listen, looks like it's a record first half year, and more of the same to come. And you just said that. So as far as you're concerned, Seeing Machines and the guys there must be quite buoyed by this, are they?
Yes, I think everyone, it was the capital raise in particular, I think, was very nice to get that away. I think for a number of years there, we've been coming and going to AIM, to the London Stock Exchange, to take monies from shareholders to help keep us going. But this was, we always said that, this was going to be the one chance where we'd work out what we needed for the long term and come and get it all in one go, so that really that sort of balance sheet risk would be taken away, and that now frees us all up to be able to really execute on our plans and commercialise this technology in such an important sector.
Marvellous stuff. Well, James, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of where you're headed, the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, please give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Okay, three reasons, right. So I'd say, number one, everyone's kind of interested in cars. They either drive a car or they ride in a car, and so I think it's something that people can relate to. So it's that'd be the first reason. The second reason is it's really cool technology, that saves lives and makes our roads safer, and I guess everyone's interested in that. And the third reason is, the company's at a real inflection point at the moment. I mean, the adoption of this technology is really escalating. We've got regulators coming out and hinting that in the roadmap of the future, this is going to be, it's going to be expected to be a standard feature. And I think we're seeing take up both in the retrofit application and also in automotive really starting to accelerate. So I think it's a really fast moving space. We've got the best technology out there. And I think the future looks bright.
Excellent stuff. James, good to chat to you. And hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Good talking to you. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Russ Mould, Investment Director at Stockbroker AJ Bell. You all right, Russ?
I'm very well, Justin. How are you?
I'm all right. We went out in London for a game of crazy golf last night.
Living on the high hog then, Justin.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was doing very well as well. It's a little course. You start off, your maximum you can have is six. When you have six, that's it. You move on to the next one. But I started off, everyone else had a three or four. I started off with two. The next one, I was winning on the next hole. Then I had a disastrous third hole and maximum six.
A golfer's tale of woe, I'm sure, exactly. I'm sure it was all the club's fault.
It was, definitely.
Faulty equipment.
A dodgy putter, I think it was.
Yes, faulty equipment.
I can't blame the ball because we all use the same ball, the same team. So, Russell. Before we get on to some stocks to chat
tell
about.
Tell me.
Yeah, I was just going to ask, this trade war that Trump is starting, has anyone else retaliated yet?
Not that Canada was threatening to. They were talking about tariffs on American wine, and then surprise, surprise, America went, oh, actually, no, we'll give Canada and Mexico some exemptions. Yeah. From the steel and aluminium. Well, which makes sense, given that Canada and Mexico are America's two biggest export markets.
Yeah.
So somebody there did at least use their loaf. But we've not seen anything else yet. No, I mean, China obviously is the big worry because I'm convinced that's at whom all of this is aimed. China is about two-thirds of the U.S. trade deficit, and I'm sure that's who President Trump is determined to get at. They've maintained a dignified silence thus far.
Yeah, okay, well, we'll see. We'll see what happens there. I hope they don't follow his lead, because it doesn't lead to a sticky end there, isn't it, really?
Generally, yes.
Yeah, cool. Okay, stocks, what are we looking at, Rush?
So three against the field, all of whom we've looked at before, Alumask, Manx Telecom, and Theresa.
Alumask, huh? What is it?
Alumask.
Alumask.
ALU. It's a FTSE fledgling company, actually. Yeah. Market cap's about £60 million. Pounds. Yeah. And we looked at it last spring at about 180p, and then before Christmas we had a discussion about it and we ran off in the opposite direction at 170p.
Yeah.
So and really, just because, you know, the construction PMI numbers weren't great, the industry talk wasn't good, and although you've got a company that's got a really interesting strategy of turning itself from an engineering conglomerate to sort of niche building product specialist in areas like solar, waste and water management and roofing, You just think the environment's not being very helpful here. The first half numbers were okay, although they then were a little bit short in the first half. Don't worry, it'll all come round in the second. Anyway, they slopped out a profit warning this week.
Look at the chart. What's happened there? It's gapped down massively, yeah.
It's gapped down from 168 to 132. So, thankfully, we ran away in the opposite direction at a pretty good time. Mm. And the company's blamed weak macro, which is where we were coming from, some industry specific problems. The word Carillion got mentioned, saying it's had ripple effects throughout the whole building contractors chain.
Ooh.
They talked about some delays in some Scottish refurbishment businesses, and they played the weather card.
They're blaming everything, essentially. What else can we blame, guys?
Didn't they blame Trump? Earnings forecast down about 15%, shares have dropped by a third. So I think that the three lessons here that I would draw are, first of all this stuff that you get from companies about, don't worry, there's more of a second half waiting, it's all going to be fine. Tread very, very carefully when they say that, because clearly there's a little bit of crossed fingers there that everything drops into place just for them to make the numbers, let alone beat the numbers. And other companies who've recently, just by the way, played the it's all going to be okay in the second half card, Ultra Electronics, Alpha Financial, Green Core, PZ Cousins, Redhall, and it didn't really work out for any of them. So again, just be a little bit careful there, ladies and gentlemen. If somebody says, don't worry, it'll all catch up, be careful.
It's almost betting on hope a little bit there, aren't they? You know?
There's an element of crossed fingers and hope for the best.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other one is, I do think it's an interesting company. I think management are sensible, but it's an old saying that a former colleague at the investment bank gave me, which is a bad stock in a good sector will generally outperform a good stock in a bad sector. And at the moment, I think construction feels like a bad sector. Barclay Group, the house builder, haven't exactly been singing all sweetness and light this morning either. That stock's down 5 or 6%. So I think at the moment, I think it's an interesting company. It's on only 10 times forward earnings. It's got a 4% dividend yield. It's got a net cash balance sheet. So if you've got it, you kind of think, well, it's not going to fold under me. I've got time on my side. I believe in if you believe in management strategy, there's no point locking in the loss now. If you haven't got it, there's no boiling need to pile in. So it's one still for a watching brief. We took evasive action luckily. We've got the luxury now of being able to wait and have another look at it. If you've got it, you're probably in there for a long haul on the turnaround story now. But certainly in terms of the industry macro, you're not going to get a lot of help. I guess if you're giving them the benefit of the doubt, the weather's going to improve at some stage. Hopefully those delayed Scottish projects will come back and the Carillion ripple effect will die down. Yeah. But at the moment, no boiling rush.
Interesting to see that mention of Carillion. I wonder if any other companies are having feeling that effect.
It's rippled through a couple. I mean, Galliford Try have obviously ended up raising some cash. Balfour Beatty took a $44 million write down. Kia are a joint venture partner with a company in some motorways and HS2 contracts. So I think it is going to keep rippling around. It's interesting that Alamask have specifically said, you know, it's caused them some problems, because Alamask isn't in the end a very big company. So it I'm sure it'll something that we may see cropping up for some time to come. But yeah, a couple of useful lessons: the second half waiting game, and good sector, bad, good stock, bad sector, bad stock, good sector. It's one worth bearing in mind, at least if you've got a fairly short-term time horizon.
Yeah, say that again. I quite like that when you said it first.
So a good stock, a bad stock in a good sector will generally outperform a good stock in a bad sector. So if, for example, you think, oh, well, actually, you know, at the moment, I don't know, let's think of an example, a wild one. Pharmaceutical companies are very in fashion. There's been some major drug discoveries. Yeah. Sector's off to the races. Even if you've got companies who've got a very ropey pipeline, they might get dragged along for the ride just because people think they're going to get the pipeline right this time. If at the same time the oil price is going through the roof and the economy is going through the floor, no matter how good an airline you are, your stock's probably going nowhere fast. If anything, it's probably going down. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go.
Just looking at the quick another chart on Alimask. I mean,
where's the support level?
Do you know what, it's spiked down to 115, right? And it's been there before.
So
back in July it went down there. And whenever you see a spike down like that, a company can retest that again, or close to. So even those pumps, like a bit of a cork, it's gone back up in the water at 130, it could come down to that level again and retest that. So it hasn't settled down yet, you know.
That's why I think we've got the luxury of having a watching brief, having thankfully managed to duck one.
Yeah, exactly. Marvellous. what's next, Ross?
So the second one is Manx Telecom, which is income hunters listen up, everybody else move on. I mean, and that's the story we've been with this one ever since we first looked at it at 190p, and I bet the chart looks like it's as flat as a pat. I know it'll vary a little bit between probably 180 and 205 or 210, but this share price to me isn't going anywhere. But it's all about the yield. Full year figures.
Do you know what I don't like about this share price? I mean, it is grinding slowly down, but it's always been under the 200-day moving average. It's never really got above that. And that's regarded as a bull bear sort of, you know, indicator. And if you're above that, it's quite bullish. And they don't seem to sort of get above it. You know,
So we've got to watch the income at the moment. Looks fine. So the full year numbers were out. Small drop in revenues. Don't forget, this is the Isle of Man's telecom broadband provider, and it's also got some data centers and IT services. Fixed line and broadband were flat. Mobile was a small down on a cut on roaming charges going down. IT services were okay on some global roaming agreements. Data centers has been the weak point. That's what's really let them down. Sales were down nearly a fifth, although the second half was up on the first. So that's what we've got to watch. Pre-tax profits were actually up on a stated basis on some good cost control. Net debt, $57 million, no great panic on. And the big news is the dividend's up a little bit. The yield is 6%. And if you're an income hunter, that's naturally going to come onto your radar. Now, clearly what you've got to do here is make sure that the dividend's safe. Because otherwise, as you said, you're going to get no love out of this in terms of the earnings. And the chart isn't the world's prettiest. Yeah. This is a sort that's just bobbling around. Dividend cover on stated earnings is about 1.2, 1.3 times. A bit lower than you would like on balance. And if you look at free cash flow, you know, operating profit of 12, add on depreciation of 10, add on networking capital of 500 grand, take off 9 of CapEx, you've got 12 million of free cash flow, and the dividend's costing them 12 million quid. So again, there's not a lot of room there, except within the cash flow, there's about 8 million quids worth of costs and investment right now relating to their growth and transformation programs. So if you give them the benefit of the doubt there, frankly, you can relax with 20 million of free cash flow and a dividend of 12. Happy, you know, pretty happy days for a utility where there's, let's face it, going to be fairly consistent demand.
Yeah.
If those costs keep on trundling along, you know, you're not as comfortable as you would like to be. So I'm going to stick with it. But A, I have looked at the chart, unusually for me, and it isn't the prettiest thing you've ever seen. And B, you want to make sure that the data center business doesn't just trip them up and begin to nibble away at the free cash flow. So for the moment, all's good. Income hunters will probably stick with it, but anybody else is just going to yawn and move on.
Do you know, 180 is an interesting level here. 184 and a half we're at, but 180, I think it could find support there. If it doesn't, it's going a bit lower, but that seems...
There you go.
It's found support there before. Cool. Anything else, Redrust?
And the last one's Tharisa. Very quickly, yep. Our good the South African chrome and platinum group metals miner. Mm-hmm. Share price has just put a bit of a spurt on recently, and I think there are two reasons for that. One was an analyst visit to the facility in South Africa where they talked a lot about productivity and operational improvements. And the second, although that's coming at the cost of the short-term investment, so earnings are going to drop a little bit potentially this year. And the second is we obviously have the new South African president, Mr. Ramaphosa. He's a former senior official in the National Union of Mine Workers, but he is coming out and looking to review the mining charter that his predecessor, Jacob Zuma, was looking to put in last year, which was going to be increasing royalty payments by miners, increasing local share ownership and ownership of mining activities. So Ramaphosa looks currently pro-business, pro-mining. That could sentiment-wise give a lift to miners, and certainly financial-wise, if the royalties don't go up as much as people think. You've got a miner, PE of 9, pays a dividend yield of around 3%, having just started dividends, so the valuation looks fine. You're going to have to be patient, again, because it's investment this year, so you haven't got, you know, much of an earnings catalyst. But if the numbers are any good... and there's one note out there reckoning that if they meet their production targets by 2020, 2021, there's going to be 160 million of free cash flow coming out of business, which is going to be nearly, what, a third or fourth, 40% of the market cap. You do have a very interesting cycle story. Goldman have gone bullish on mining this week, if you're interested in that sort of thing. Personally, I would always rather follow what Goldman are doing rather than what Goldman is saying, so we'll take a view. If you're into the inflation, global synchronized recovery story, miners are going to be for you. And this is one that I think is still fine, under the radar, cheap, paying a dividend. And at the moment, the local macro, having been all against it for 12 months, now seems to be going the right way. But high risk, not for widows and orphans, but for people who like to speculate, to accumulate, worth a look, I think.
Marvellous stuff, Russ. Thanks for that, and we'll chat next week, fella.
I look forward to it. Take care.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At 5, Ascent Resources, AST. At 4, VR Education Holdings, VRE. At 3, Georgian Mining Corporation, GEO. At 2, URU Metals, that's URU. And number 1 most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours is... Velocis. VLS. All right, time for the top 5 most liked RNSs. They are as follows. At 5, Extract Resources, XTR, appointment of broker. At 4, Ectech, that's EQT. At 3, Thor Mining, THR, that's Pilot Mountain Project and Business Update. Oh, by the way, Ectech was an update on unsecured convertible loan facility. At 2, Premier African Minerals, cancellation of warrants, placing an update. And the number 1 most liked RNS was from URU Metals. That's Zebedee Assay Results. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz, discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.